I'd like to welcome you and thank you all very much for coming out this early in the morning. In today's program, we'll be speaking about a number of issues that pertain specifically to iron treatment. So my name is Stephen Fishbane. I'm the Associate Director of Nephrology at Winthrop University Hospital in New York. I'm a member of the KDOQI Anemia Work Group that is currently writing the new KDOQI Anemia guidelines, which will be published sometime early in 2006. And we will begin today's presentation by talking about some of the factors that frame today's two lectures. In the diagnosis of iron deficiency, one of the challenges that nurses and physicians face is that serum ferritin is a highly variable test. And there are going to be many patients that have relatively high levels of serum ferritin, and we always have the question, don't we? What do you do when the transferrin saturation is relatively low, but the serum ferritin value is high? And we'll talk about that. When treating anemia in children, pediatric dialysis patients suffer complications related to anemia treatment that are particularly important, and they have an increased risk for lower hemoglobin and hematocrit levels. And in Dr. Wardy's lecture today, we'll speak more regarding this important patient population. What are the benefits of intravenous iron treatment? Without intravenous iron, absolute iron deficiency develops in most hemodialysis patients. So if you don't treat with intravenous iron, patients will, for the most part, tend to become severely iron deficient. Functional iron deficiency, which we will speak about a bit more later, happens as well. But it's very clear that both erythropoietin and iron are important components of successful and adequate anemia treatment. And here's some of the data that forms the basis. The initial study, which I'll show you more of later, by Chang et al., shows the yellow vertical bar representing EPO doses before an intensive intravenous iron course. And then you see a significant reduction in the need for iron, in the need for erythropoietin after effective intravenous iron treatment. In fact, there are 14 published studies which show that intravenous iron is remarkably effective for improving anemia therapy, for getting better hemoglobin levels, and for reducing the overall EPO dose requirement. This is an interesting study that was presented a couple of years ago at ASN by Sun et al. And what they did is look at the risk of death for patients in relationship to the amount of iron that they were treated with. And in the first group of vertical bars, you'll see that the absolute highest risk of death was in patients who were treated with no iron at all. And that would make sense that if you don't treat with one of the body's most important molecules and allow people to be severely iron deficient, that you're going to hurt function of key tissues and organs throughout the body. This is a study by Feudin et al., and it points out to a really great extent just how ineffective oral iron is in the hemodialysis population. And you'll notice here that if you go from, this is the oral iron group, going from baseline to 12 months to 2 years, that the hemoglobin levels with oral iron by itself tended to decrease. If you gave no iron, hemoglobin levels tended to decrease. And please note that there's no difference in effectiveness between oral or no iron. So that in hemodialysis patients, at least, oral iron has no demonstrable efficacy. And that's why intravenous iron forms such a cornerstone of treatment. In the intravenous iron group, Feudin et al. Shows a very brisk response. And this is without any EPO treatment being given. So just with intravenous iron by itself, patients had a very significant improvement in hemoglobin levels. So maintenance iron, you can give intravenous iron in two ways. You could test every 3 months, and then if iron deficient, you can give a large dose like we typically do, 125 milligrams for 8 consecutive treatments. And that tends to be called a repletive strategy for iron treatment. The alternative is maintenance therapy, simply giving weekly doses of intravenous iron in order to anticipate the fact that most dialysis patients become iron deficient. And maintenance iron therapy avoids the seesawing of starting and stopping iron treatment, which is probably not biologically the best way to give treatment, and it tends to keep hemoglobin, TSAT, and ferritin within the target ranges. So KDOQI guidelines suggest that most hemodialysis patients will require treatment with intravenous iron on a regular basis. That comes from the 2001 guidelines. And the objective of treatment is to achieve a serum ferritin of 100 to 800 and a transferrin saturation of 20 to 50% with weekly dosing of intravenous iron. Now, iron is important for raising hemoglobin levels and for being successful in achieving KDOQI targets. But please recall that although iron in hemoglobin in red blood cells is a vitally important biological function, that the importance of iron in all of our bodies and in all of our patients goes far beyond just raising hemoglobin levels. And when we look at some of the non-hematologic effects of iron, one of the interesting early studies, and this was from Johns Hopkins, published in The Lancet, they looked at teenage girls, for the most part, who were iron deficient. And iron deficiency is very common in young women, and particularly in the teenage years, as people are growing fast and starting to menstruate. And they found that there was a decrease in cognition, in learning, memory, and that when they treated with iron, before the hemoglobin level rose at all, as they treated the iron deficiency, that the girl's ability to think more clearly, to remember, and to learn were all improved. So iron plays an important role in cognition and in learning. Regarding restless leg syndrome, now this is a problem that I'm sure many of you have seen. I just, Friday night of last week, in one of our dialysis units, saw a patient whose legs were just shaking like crazy throughout the treatment, and it's a very disturbing symptom to the patients. Well, it's been known that patients with restless leg syndrome tend to have more iron deficiency than others. That doesn't prove, though, that treatment with iron would work. But here's a nice study from Sloand et al., published in 2004. And what they did is they took patients with restless leg syndrome. Half of them were treated with placebo. And you see that the symptoms of restless leg syndrome did not change. But when they treated with intravenous iron instead, there was a very sharp reduction in symptoms of restless leg syndrome. It didn't completely eliminate the symptoms, but it did reduce them to a very important extent. So in patients who have restless leg syndrome on dialysis, one of the considerations should be, is the patient iron deficient? Thermoregulation. I won't go through all the text on this slide, but I'm sure you're aware that many patients on dialysis feel cold much of the time, even when the weather is warm. And part of how the body regulates temperature and regulates the sensation of temperature relates to iron status. Patients who are more iron deficient tend to feel cold more frequently. And it may be that intravenous iron treatment, although this is not well tested yet, could improve some of that dysregulation of temperature sensation. Now, interestingly, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, seems also to have a link to some extent with iron status. Ferritin values are lower in children with attention deficit disorder than they are in control children, suggesting at least the possibility that in children with ADHD that iron deficiency might be an important point that regulates. So that is an introduction. The goals of today's program, I will speak first and then Dr. Wardy will speak after me. At the end we'll have a question and answer session. Again, as you have your questions, please do write them down on your Q&A cards and they will be collected from you at the end of each of the lectures. Our program goals are to discuss some very special concerns. One of them regards serum ferritin and how we use it when the numbers tend to be on the high side. Managing patients with higher serum ferritin values. When do you treat with intravenous iron and when do you not treat these patients? And then we'll look at this interesting and special population of the pediatric patient with kidney disease.